Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Coach Unplugged. Before we jump in today, I'd like to give a big shout to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. Great people up in Bloomington, Minnesota. Mention Coach Unplugged. They'll give you $350 off. They work on trade-ins. They will give you $350 off if you mention me. They will work on financing. They will make it happen for you. Trust me, I've had enough people go through them. We just had a teachhoops.com member buy two of them. So go over and check them out. Tell them I sent you. They'll get you a great deal. Trust me. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. You know, if you're sick of not knowing what to do, if you're sick of being frustrated, if you're sick of being 500, if you're sick of not winning more games, come over and join it. Let me help you through all those frustrations. Let me help you through all those obstacles. I have done it for 30 years. I've won at the highest level. Let me help you do that. TeachHoops.com is that answer for you. So go over and check it out. Let's head off to the podcast.
Like, I don't think I was ever like a terrible person or a difficult person to play for. Like, I've always loved and cared for my kids, but I didn't get to that transformational place as fast as I wish I would have. It was still like early on in my career, I wanted people to notice how good of a coach I was.
Right.
And it was more about serving my own needs. And coaching was an ego thing for me. I wanted to call that play and I wanted it to work out really well.
Right.
And I wanted everybody in the stands to go, my gosh, this guy is a genius. Yep. Look at him. He knows what he's doing.
And so they say the youth is wasted on the young or something. It's like, oh, I mean, I'll tell you a story. My best team ever, we lost in the finals. And and that was the greatest group of young men. And I feel so, I mean, I wasn't the coach I needed to be at that point for them.
Mm-hmm.
If I had them now, it's like, you know, so it's, yeah, I mean, regrets are, you know, long lists of things that, but, you know, it, yeah, I wish I could go back. You're right.
Right.
I wish that learning curve could have been faster.
Right. And I think that my, like, kind of the hunger I have for wanting to grow and to develop, I'd gotten that a little bit sooner and gotten to where I was in a place to serve my players a little bit quicker. And that in turn takes me down that path of teaching decision making and not worrying about
right.
executing the perfect practice or the perfect play, because it ultimately was keeping us from realizing our potential as a team and
right.
holding us back. And I've got groups that I wish I could go back, and I kind of want to apologize to them when
yeah,
I see them. I'm like,
I'm
man,
telling
like
you.
If we could have just, if I could have been doing this with you then, you know, man, we might not have won a state championship or this or that, but we would have been better because
right.
I would have kind of gotten out of y'all's way and allowed you guys to be kids and be creative and be players and me not try to control every aspect of what we're doing. Because again, I just thought that's what good coaching was. You know, I mean, I grew up watching coaches stand up and holler out and tell everybody where
yep.
to go. And if you watch Monday Night Football, you're going to hear all them talk about is how well designed a play
right.
is. And this coach spends 90 hours a week watching film and they do this and they do that. And so it's like, we make the coach so important.
Right.
And you're a young coach, you feel like you have to be that way.
On my many walks with my dogs, I've had many reflections on this. I think, and I played college basketball, and And I think the issue is, for at least for me, was that change. And you've talked about it previously, was the change from, there's things I didn't think about as a, and I had great coaches growing up, but there were things that I was just playing, to be honest with you. Mm. I wasn't putting that depth into how coaches were. And then all of a sudden you graduate, your playing career is over, and then you become a coach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like becoming a parent. They give you this baby and say, go home from the hospital. And
right.
You're like, whoa, is there a manual? Whoa, you know, it's like, I mean, just like, it's similar. It's like they're turning over these 15 or 16 young men or young women to you to mentor. And what do you fall back on? You fall back on the things that you kind of learned while you were a player, to be honest with you. So I think that's a hard transformation. It took me a while to get out of that mode of, you're not a player anymore. Now you're a coach.
Right. Yeah. That's, and I, like I said, I was right around 24, I suppose. So, you know, I had like 3 or 4 seniors. I'm only 6 years older than them, you know? And it's like, okay, listen to me and let me lead you. And I'm saying all the right things. I think I'm saying all the right things. I think I believe the stuff that I was preaching to them. And like I said, I don't think anything is done in malice or, with detriment to the kids on purpose or anything like that. But you're right. Like, here you go. You know, you run this entire program, be in charge of all this money, right. You know, be in charge of these lives of these kids as you get put on a bus and you drive 2.5 hours in the rain and come home. And it's just like, you don't, right. There's right. No class to prepare you for that kind of stuff.
Right. And you got to figure out how to deal with the parents and talk to the parents and do all that kind of stuff. And no one right. teaches you that. Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times, you know, when you have a conversation with a parent, their first question is always, well, do you have kids? And it's like, well, no, I don't. But it's like, well, I don't think that justifies me to not be able to coach your kids or this or that. And then you become a parent and it's like, oh, wow. You know, the parents have a clue because they're looking at their kid through a different lens right. than you are. Right. Because that's their baby. And
right.
And you know, so now I kind of look at my little daughter and I'm like, okay, well, having her has helped me figure out what kind of coach and teacher I want to be. But at the same time, being a coach and a teacher and dealing with parents and kids has also showed me what kind of a parent I want to be
right.
Or don't want to be. And I think those things can go hand in hand where you kind of sit there and figure out like, okay, I see this situation kind of on the outside, like, this is how I would want to handle it if I'm the parent in this situation, or vice versa. Or when my kid gets in the car with me after a game and she's upset, this is how I feel like I need to handle this because I right. don't want to, you know, ruin her playing career or what right. that or coach is telling her. Or,
yeah,
her
yeah,
self-esteem, yeah. right? Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So is that what you would, what would you tell yourself? What would you tell a young coach, the 22-year-old that's coming out? Is there any advice you'd give different than that?
I would tell them to try to understand that you don't know everything right now at 22, like as hard as that is to swallow, but to have more humility and try to develop a growth mindset and just understand the fact that, yeah, you're going to get a lot of unsolicited advice and a lot of that advice might be bad advice, but I still think you can learn from the bad advice. Like we've all learned plenty of things from bad coaches or, you know, people or we don't want to do. That's what I'm saying, right? But yeah. It's still something you learn, right? So, right. You know, kind of take everything as don't take anything, try not to take anything personally, but accept everything as part of that journey. Because if you're a 22-year-old coach, chances are you're going to be a better coach at 23, but you're not near where you want to be, right? And so it's about kind of accepting whatever comes along the way. Don't get too high, but don't get too low at the same time. You know, you can win a championship, you can get let go, and you can't let something like that get you too down, and you can't let winning one keep you too high, because as soon as you win one, everybody wants you to win two. And right. The minute you don't win two, you're back down on the bottom again. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. You're always like, I just grabbed something too that I was reading today. I don't remember. I want to say it was New York Times. Might've been the Washington Post, but it was basically redefining success, adopt the journey mindset to move forward. So there's basically these studies, I think it was published in August about, you know, and I've learned this over time. You can't define your success by a ring or a gold ball.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to wish your life away and you're going to miss the journey. And they've done all these studies about it. It's really about the journey. I mean, that's what life is, to be honest with you. Right. Being a parent is, I mean, I got one that's going to be leaving the house. It's like, you snap your finger and it's over, but it's been about that. It's been that journey along the way. So that journey mindset, it's the first time I had heard someone actually put it in writing, but it's like,
yeah.
Yes. It's like,
so it's kind of like the, you know, process oriented, I guess, and process right. over progress, right? Or progress over perfection.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same way. Like, you know, when we brought our daughter home, it was like, okay, this part about being a parent to a baby is really tough. Life is going to be so much easier when X happens. And then that happens and life doesn't get easier because it just, it presents like one extra problem. Like, okay, it'll be really nice when we don't have to, you know, do diapers anymore. But right. then when you're out of diapers, it just presents a whole nother right. problem. So
I'm going to go on record that getting rid of the diaper stage is a good stage.
It is a good stage.
It is good from having, like, I do remember that stage. It's like, ooh, this is better. This is definitely better than, you know, when they become teenagers, but it's definitely like, I do remember that. There are some thresholds. It's like, ooh, this is, you know, and I tell people, I said that window when they're like 6 to 9 is like, ooh, that's like, you're in a sweet spot at that point. I'm telling you, you haven't reached that one yet, but
we're not quite there yet.
They're self-sufficient. They love you up, you know. It's not like, and the point of, I've always told my students is the point of parenting, and the point is I'm to get you out of the nest, you know. you know, right. Eagles actually put glass and rocks in the bottom of their nest because as the eaglets get bigger and bigger, they eventually figure out they don't want to be in the nest anymore.
Right.
Because they start weighing more and then they start, ooh, this isn't comfortable. I'm
not leaving. Comfortable. Right.
Our job is to, like I tell my wife, our job is to get them ready to leave. Like right. that's our job, to make them self-sufficient, you know, reliable, all those things. That's our job. It's a sad job because it's like, but that's as parents, that's what we want to do. If you could talk to one coach, any sport, who would you talk to?
Oh, wow.
I love that one. Wow. I always love that. I throw everybody that question.
Yeah, that kind of puts me on the spot there. That's a great question. I don't guess I could like punt and say my former self.
Oh, that's good. No one said that. I love that.
If I could get away with that, because like we were talking about with regrets, you know, going back and talking to that person or I'd even say this, my future self,
right.
to kind of see where we're headed.
I think leave that. That's like might be the one of the best answers. That's a great answer. Do you have any superstitions?
I, to steal from Michael Scott from The Office, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
okay, you like The Office. Where's my, you see yeah. my Dwight, my
I Dwight see the thing. Dwight doll, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I was always one of those where like, you know, if I, you know, hit 4 threes in a game, like I want to wear the same socks, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. And, these last 2 years, during our successful runs, it was like, you know, something would happen and we would win and we would just kind of keep it going. Now, the reason we were winning is because we were talented, but I found myself getting like in these routines that, yeah, I did not want to break because if we were going to get beat, it wasn't going to be because I didn't do what I was supposed to do. So like I had my game sheet, my game note sheet that I had pregame every game. And I made sure that, you know, the same types of information was on there. I went through kind of my mental reps. I wanted to scout the same way. If we all tried to go eat at the same restaurant before, like pregame as coaches, if we could, you know, we were fortunate to get down there and win the first title. So the next year when we got back down there, it was okay. We're going to do this again. We're going to go eat at this restaurant again. Yeah. We're going to try to practice at this time. We're going to try to do everything the same because it's just like in your mind, I guess it's a little bit of a comfort.
And it's a routine. There's nothing wrong. I tell people it's more about routine than superstition.
Right. Yeah. I would agree with that too. Yeah.
You know, it's like how you go to work every morning, how you present your classes, all that stuff is, it's really about routine. All right. So I'm going to give you a rapid fire and then we'll do some closing things here. So rapid fire, I basically ask you a question. It can be as fast or as quick as you want. I just look for different responses from different coaches. What is your favorite brand of basketball? And what I mean by brand is literally type of basketball that you use to shoot. Like,
oh, Wilson Evolution.
Okay. And why do you like the Wilson?
I just like the feel. Like, it just feels good in my hands. I don't have very big hands. And so like, I just feel like I get better grip on that. And so every time I've ever held a Wilson Evolution, that just feels like it's a part of my hands.
I do. I like the Wilson a lot too. We use Spalding because that's what they use in the state tournament.
We have Bodden in Louisiana. Okay. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it's what we use. But if I'm going to go play somewhere, I'm looking on the rack for a Wilson.
I like that too. One word to describe your ideal player.
A teammate.
Ooh, I like that. That might be the first one that said that. You go to any sporting event in the entire world, what would it be and why?
Entire sporting event. I've never been to the Kentucky Derby, and I grew up loving horse racing, so I think I would love to go watch.
I've never said this. I learned. My parents taught me how to read at the horse track. Actually, I think, I'm convinced. My dad taught me. I mean, I think part of my math brain came from reading the form when I was little at Arlington, which is outside of Chicago. Favorite pregame meal.
Well, the last 2 years, it's been the barbecue nachos at Brister's in Ruston, Louisiana. That's where we would go just about every game, every important game. And I would always get the brisket barbecue nachos.
Wow. Southern barbecue is good. I was at a clinic outside of Georgia, and it was like, we got some good, it's like, ooh, barbecue. It was exceptional. Let me tell
phenomenal.
You.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
One skill not being taught today. I think we already kind of talked about this one, but
yeah. You know, I think one thing that lacks as far as like, if we're going to go like fundamental skills is a huge lack of, just shooting technique. Like I don't know if, you know, we could sit here and dissect on how you do it and if there's one way, and I'm not a huge technique kind of person. Like, I don't think there's one way of doing it, but when it comes down to, okay, like the confidence part of shooting. And getting, like, I think that's the biggest part of shooting.
My son can shoot. I mean, legit. Like, he'll be the last one to, he'd come in here and say, you never compliment me. He can legit, he can shoot. He has a green light from the international line if he's open.
Right.
Legit. Like, I think he can play college basketball. I mean, there's some people. He's 6'1" and he's not super quick, but he can shoot the ball. And the only reason he can do that is because he has probably shot more shots than anybody in our county or parish. That's it. I mean, his form's really good and we've broke it down, but I don't think kids shoot like they used to shoot.
I would amend my answer is not like shooting, but working on your shooting, like taking the reps. Cause I was the same way. I'm like barely under 5'11", but I was this tall in like sixth grade, seventh grade. Right. So I was a post player. All of a sudden, I'm a sophomore. Everybody's 6'4". I can't dribble the ball because I was never allowed to because I was a post player.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it was like, well, if I'm going to play, what am I going to do? And so I had to learn how to shoot. And I took charges and made threes and free throws. You know, and it was just the only way I learned how to do that. I did it on my own. I didn't have a skills coach or somebody telling me like, this is where my thumb should be and this and that.
Right.
I got in a gym and I figured it out.
And you shot every day. I mean, I just don't think it's, I mean, I used to do it to relax. Like, where's Steve? Oh, he's out back shooting. Well, I'm shooting because no one's bothering me. It's kind of my time. I don't think kids do that anymore. I mean, I'm sounding like the guy, get off my porch. I'm sounding like dad. But I just don't see it. I just don't.
No.
And they have more tools than we did too with the dish, all that stuff. But it's like, I just don't think they're spending, it's really about repetition. They'll get in the weight room.
Yeah. And this might be a little bit of a romanticization, but like it's me in the driveway at night with that one little light on the garage that you can barely see the rim.
Right.
And you're out there and mom's yelling at you to come in and it's just, you're like, I'm going to shoot for 30 more minutes. It's kind of a cool Christmas evening.
We're sounding like old men. We're sounding like Rochester
old
men. But I had a driveway literally, and I can shoot corner threes. I still can shoot them because our driveway was flat and then it went down. Like, it was flat. So if you shot in the baseline corner, you were shooting uphill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I shot that shot thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Yeah, I mean, I'm old school. I'm much older than you. Like, I had boombox and the big jug of water and all that kind of stuff. What's one thing you do to relax?
This might sound kind of funny, but I watch film.
Really?
Like, yeah. There's something therapeutic about it, and it might not be my film. I might get on and watch a Euro game on FIBA. Right. But like, I mean, I enjoy playing golf and, you know, watching Netflix and this and that, but it's almost kind of like that therapeutic puzzle.
Hey coach, hope you're enjoying the podcast. A couple of things that doesn't cost you a cent to do. You can subscribe and like, leave a written review. We really like that. You can go over to our YouTube channel. Just type in T-Tubes on YouTube and you find our YouTube channel. Subscribe, like there, so you'll always get the updates. Next thing is, if you do any shopping on Amazon, go down below, click our Amazon link, www.tchoops.com/Amazon. Anytime you're doing shopping on Amazon, we get a small little commission. Helps us with our hosting fees. Be surprised how expensive it is to run one of these. And if you really love this stuff, you know, let me help you. Let me mentor you. Let me email. Let me get on one-on-one calls. Let me show you all the resources that will help me become one of the winningest coaches in the state of Wisconsin. You know, that's why I'm doing this. I want to help coaches become better. So T-Tubes.com can do that. All right, let's head off to the podcast.
You know, like okay. Some people do a crossword or a Sudoku, yep. Or they'll color or they'll read. Like, to me, like watching a game with when there's nothing really on the line, it's like doing a puzzle.
No, that's bless you, because I can't do. I used to go to Badger game. I can't go anymore. Like, I can't literally turn my like coaching. It's crazy. I can't watch. If I start doing even a game for entertainment, I can watch the NBA finals. I can watch, and usually I can watch some of the NCAAs and not start dissecting. But it's like, I can't turn my brain off. It's like,
well, I think that's part of like, I have a really hard time turning mine off. So I don't do well, like idling and right. kind of quiet. So I think that's kind of like, it's kind of mindless at the right. same time, because I'm on autopilot, but it gives me enough that where my brain is kind of working, where it puts me
you're
in
down,
this
you're
kind
down
of
shifting.
A,
yeah. You're down.
Yeah. Yeah. Shifting. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm in a good place.
Okay. Know? What's the best basketball player you've seen in person?
As far as like just going to any game and like just spectating or like
yeah,
up close.
You've seen not on TV in person, best player you've seen in person.
Well, best and then kind of favorite. I'm a Mavs fan. So I'm going to say Dirk.
Okay. So Wesley's one of my guys. I'll tell him he said that. Okay, next.
Yeah, I would say Dirk, you know, being, like I said, kind of my Mavs fan and getting to watch him up close was really cool, especially a few years ago before he was kind of on his, yeah. on his downslide. But I did get to go watch him one last time, you know, last year when he was playing like 6 minutes a game.
Right.
Just coming out and shooting one shot for everybody. But I would say him and then – I would say this too. In college, the guy that I really enjoyed watching the most up close was a guy by the name of Kyle Gibson. I don't know if anybody will know who he is, but he's playing overseas. But he was like the consummate teammate guy playing for Louisiana Tech, and was 6'4". But we asked him to do everything. He had to play 1 through 5, and he was always probably my favorite player that I got to watch day to day in the gym, in the weight room, film room, this and that.
And how would you describe him?
The consummate teammate. I mean, okay. Like,
was he a hard worker?
He was at 100%, and okay. It was, and we weren't great that one year, but like, I mean, it was just whatever we needed to do to be successful, he was willing to do it.
Yeah.
And if he needed to score 30, he'd score 30, and if he needed to score 0, he would score 0. Right. If he had to guard the 6'9", he'd guard the 6'9".
That's what I tell. That's what I tell players and other people. That, you know, the reason Wesley has a career he's had in the NBA is not – there's probably 1,000 Wesleys walking around.
For sure.
He's going to outwork you. I'm telling you right now. He's going to outwork you, and he's going to be a great teammate. The two things right. you described literally describe Wesley. Like,
And I think, you know, like, even though some of that stuff is not fun, like – and he, right. and I don't, I'm not saying he enjoyed every workout. I'm not saying that he wanted right. to be – like, we all have days, but it was just like it didn't matter. Like, he was that guy – no matter what. And it was, if it was a 2-hour film session into an hour weight session, into pre-practice to practice to post-practice to this and that, like, he was the best we had.
Yeah, and that's what, and that's why they're the best in the world, to be honest right. with you. That's what separates. It's that, you know.
Right.
What's best player of all time?
I mean, I grew up watching Michael, so I'm going to have to go.
All right, Michael's winning. Michael's got about 90%. We had a LeBron recently, but
I mean – like LeBron's obviously no slouch, but I mean, just my childhood and, you know, growing up watching Michael, I'll never say anything like that.
I'm telling you right now, I'm going to go on record that the one that lives in Wisconsin right now has got a shot at it if he keeps improving.
Yeah,
I think so. He's the freak. I mean, he's just like, there's just something special about, I mean, from what I've heard, just a workhorse, workhorse. And he's got that body that just like, that's what they're looking for right now. That long, multiple position. All right. So tell us about your favorite drill. You sent it to me. I'll put it down in the show notes, but this 30-point possession, I think it was.
Yeah. Right? So that leads into what we call 100-point games. Okay. Something I got from a coach and buddy of mine. And I've kind of tweaked it over the last couple of years. The 30-point possession was something that we used as a guide to kind of evaluate our half court possessions. Like, I want to play fast. Like, I want to get up and down the floor. I don't mind shooting it as soon as we get it down there. Like, I'm all about increasing possessions. And if we can score early and often, like, let's do it. But
right. You
are going to have some neutral half court possessions. And so that was something we kind of took from that 100 point games. And we just added point values to what we emphasized or what we thought we wanted to see in a half court possession. So like in my mind, like the anatomy of our perfect half court possession might be the exchange of the ball, you know, whether it be a pass or a dribble handoff, change sides of the floor, get it in the paint, kick it out. And then maybe there's an extra, you know, to the next guy on the wing or whatever. And, and it was just, if we got those things in a half court possession.
Are you saying you're trying to get 30 points on a possession or you're just trying to get
what we kind of came up with. And again, this is not hard and fast, but if you have like a couple of passes, you change sides of the floor, you hit the paint, you kick it, you get an extra, and you take an open three, that's going to get you to that 30-point mark.
Okay.
And so it doesn't necessarily involve running a complicated set. You don't have to have like, we're not saying like pass it five times or set two back screens or,
right,
you know, change the sides of the floor three times before we can shoot it. It wasn't a set of rules to say we have to do this before we can take a shot. Like, we want the best open look we can get as soon as we can. But what I watched from watching all the film was that if those things happened, chances are we were getting a really, really good look. And again, that's in the context of a 5-on-5 neutral half court possession. So we don't,
five
we're not
five,
in
transition. Meaning this is non-transition.
Right. We're not in transition. Like, we need to create something here.
Okay. And
like
kick out, you mean drive and kick?
Drive and kick. And then the extra would be like, I guess some people would call it a one more or something like that.
Yeah,
so like we always had the corner and the zero and the 45, the corner and the wing occupied. So whoever that was kicked to, you know, chances are the other guy was going to be getting the shot because you're beating a rotating defense at that point.
Okay. And then what do you mean by 100-point game then?
So that is where we would put zeros on the clock. You know, one team would have the ball, one team would be on defense, and the first team to get to 100 points won the game. So we would count all of those things. It was kind of difficult to do. You had to get used to it. But I'm sitting over there on the side counting out, you know, every paint touch is 5 points. And so we would count up what they got in that possession. And we would tweak it, like make it, take it. If you scored, you get to keep it.
Right.
So you could, I mean, you very reasonably could score 50, 60 points in one possession.
Right.
Because if you got an offensive rebound, we might reward you with 5 extra points. And then you get to keep playing, right? So it was just about getting them to move the basketball, move themselves, share the basketball. Don't take a bad pull up or off one dribble that we would consider not to be a 9 on our shot rate chart. Like, how do we create the best look possible? Instead of coming up with a bunch of rules like pass it 10 times or set 2 back screens or we want 3 dribble handoffs, like, we don't know how we're going to get it. There's no predetermined how we get it in the paint. I mean, it might be my guard is quicker than you, so I just beat you off the dribble and I'm in the paint, and that's great. And we'll take that. And sometimes, yes, like when I talk to coaches about this, sometimes they're like, well, what if my guy beats him off the dribble and he scores a layup? I'm like, well, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But that's happening, you know, once a game, you know, maybe.
And what I love about this too, and I'll put it, like I said, I'll put it in the show notes. What I love about it, and I do something we call ours cutthroat, but it's this, you basically, whatever you think you need to work on and emphasize, give them points to it.
I mean, sure.
That's basically it. Like,
yeah,
I'm a big offensive rebound guy. you go get an offensive rebound, that'd be worth a lot, my 30 points.
Right, you might give them 10 or 15 points.
Yeah, I give them, like, you take a charge or something. So it's whatever you emphasize is what they're going to do.
Right.
And I love that. I mean,
and that's why, like, in here, like, the passes and, like, what we would call exchanges, those were only worth 1 point. Like,
right.
Because what happens is, like, the second string gets out there and they're like, oh, we'll just hand the ball back and forth to each other 10 times and get 10 points.
Right.
You know, and it's like, well, then you turned it over. Like, what if you want 30 points, if you can get the ball in the paint, kick it out, get an open three, you're going to get to 25 or 30 points. And it wasn't so much about the end result either. Like, you're only getting 2 points for a made bucket. You're only getting three for the three. So it's not so much about did the ball go in or not. And then the really what I think was truly valuable about this was, let's say your point guard, you know, breaks a guy off the dribble, gets it into the paint, and kicks it to the corner. Well, he is responsible for, you know, 10 to 15 points right there. Right. And the guy that he kicks it to doesn't shoot it. They make the extra. And the second guy is the one that actually hits the three. Your point guard gets no assist. He gets no bucket. Right. He gets no credit. But he was solely responsible for the first 15 of those 30 points.
Right.
And it was a way to honor him and, you know, value the fact that he had done all the work and set that up. So, like, the kid that actually made the bucket, he's only responsible for the 3 points and the open shot. But the point guard, and that was a way to, again, just kind of show everybody, like, yeah, you might not be the one that got that particular play in the stat sheet, but if we don't score without those 15 points of you beating your guy, getting to the other side of the floor, hitting the paint, finding the open guy, where does that decision-making come from? Like, how do you value the stuff that's never going to show up in a stat sheet?
Right. Yes. And that goes back to the communication. I love that. I love that. I'll put that down in the show notes again. What's the best game you've seen in person?
The best game I've seen, I'm actually going to say it was a state championship game in Louisiana, 5A in Monroe, Washtenaw High School in Scotlandville, double overtime. Scotlandville ended up beating them, but I had a point guard that played AAU for me who's a senior that year that played for Washtenaw and kind of hurt for him because they lost. But that is probably, I always say that's the best high school game that I've ever seen, but I might put that up to the best game I've ever seen because I was sitting right there on the side of the floor, just the atmosphere in there and just the part that it was, they're just a bunch of amateurs. You know, they're just a bunch of high school kids playing for their cities.
I'll send you a clip of my 2011. We won it in triple overtime. There was five last second shots to basically put it into it. There was a Chris Webber timeout for the other team. It was like, I mean, I literally had to come home and watch it on TV because I don't remember. I mean, I basically had to call timeouts to stop the clock. It was crazy. Yeah. That was a high school game. It was two high school amateur teams just going at it.
Yeah, just they're playing for themselves and their cities and their schools and their families and their friends and like,
yeah.
For some of them, it's the last game they're ever going to play. And there's to me, there's something special about that.
I love high school.
Sometimes, like, the best games of the year is go find a team, like, and this could be football, anything. Go find a team that has a handful of seniors on it and go watch them play a playoff game because they're literally playing for their careers at that moment. And we faced a team this last year in the playoffs that had five seniors and team we had beaten by like 30 something the year before in the semis. And this year we overlooked them. And I mean, they played like five kids whose career was on the line. And it was powerful to see, to watch them play the way they did. You know, they were outmatched, out athleted, out this and out that. And they flat out outworked us, out coached us, out everything. And it was like, that was an amazing lesson for us, you know, to not take any of those moments for granted, because they certainly didn't, which was awesome to watch.
It is. It's pure. Just spend the $3, get a thing of popcorn, and go watch a high school game. It'd be my
right.
Best basketball coach of all time.
This is going to sound kind of like cop out and cliche, but I'm a Duke guy, so I'm going to say Coach K, because I mean, obviously he's got the talent, but like the fact that he did it in the 90s, he did it in the 2000s, he's done it in the teens. He took the ego pros and corralled them and got USA basketball back where it is.
That's one of his bigger accomplishments.
I think you could argue that's probably his best coaching job that he's done is the fact that he took all of those egos. Like he made Carmelo like a selfless basketball player.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like Like, to me, that's amazing. And obviously the talent is there, but it's hard to coach talent, you know? And for him to have figured out a way to get all of their self-importance and put it to the side, even if he never drew up a play or never devised a game plan or scouted it, just the fact that he was able to get them to do that, I think is
that was crazy.
Absolutely unreal.
And one of the kids from our league he's going to IMG this year, but Jalen's going to be going there next year. It's like, why wouldn't you? You're going to one of the best coaches in the world.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No doubt about it. Favorite quote.
The one I've got in my room right now, learning is experience. Everything else is just information. And that's an Albert Einstein quote. And again, it takes me back to what we were talking about in the beginning. It doesn't matter how smart I am as your coach or how much I know or how many books I've read or, you know, how much science I know to teach to my kids. If they're not a part of the experience and they're not in the middle of it, then they're not truly learning anything. I'll still be smart in my own mind, but my job is not to be smart. My job is to make them smarter and help them grow and help them develop. Right. And so that quote, I have that written on my board in my room, and that's kind of what I try to teach and live by each day for them. And then that in turn takes me to a place of service and making sure that, again, it's not about me. It's about putting them first. And if I'm doing that, then chances are they're gonna get something out of class that day or something out of practice, right, and they'll be more successful.
They'll get a golden nugget is what I say. What favorite book?
Favorite book. So I've read a lot of good ones the last few years. The one that started all this for me was Inside Out Coaching by Joe Ehrman. Was kind of the first domino that set me down on this path. Again, talking about transformational coaching. And putting those kids at the center of everything. And in each chapter of that book, it was like little light bulbs were going off in my head. And it was like, oh man, like I've always believed this, but I'm not really doing it, or I want to do these things, or I want to live this way, but I don't really have a plan in place to make that possible. And that book kind of helped me see a lot of that. And it was a really important domino for me because it set me down the path of being more transformational, focusing intentionally on the culture that I was trying to build, which introduced me to Lead 'Em Up program with Adam Bradley. And then that in turn got me to focus and preach more about serving others, which eventually took us into this more, you know, conceptual games, right, you know, small-sided games approach. And just all of that started to come together for me. And that book was, I give that credit for what, you know, started all that for me.
Okay. So, I'll put that down so people can find that too. All right. So a parting word for a young coach or someone listening to this podcast, what would be your parting words, coach?
I would say, like, I guess some advice that I would give is try to find you some people, like a close-knit group of coaches that aren't completely like-minded, but right, you have the same values and beliefs and communicate with them almost daily. Like,
yeah, and they will question you too. It's like, I have one of those on my staff. I want one on my staff. Used to, you know, as I gotten older, I've told this 1,000 times. I want somebody on my, I have a Yoda on my staff, someone that's more knowledgeable than me. I have someone on my staff that's going to question me. I want that. Like, you know, it's like you got to find that group, that mastermind group. It's very important for.
Yeah. I love what you just said there. Cause that was, I think, the problem I had at 24, I was the smartest guy on my bench for the 7 years I was there. And that's not a compliment. Like, that's not a good thing. You don't want to be. So as a young coach, like, don't be the smartest person in the room. Find a new room. If that's the case, like find other
loyal
people.
Loyal is good. Loyal is good.
Right. I would agree with that too. Absolutely.
You want loyal. So loyal, if you got to pick, loyal is really important, especially, you know, at the younger ages. I think I don't worry about, I mean, I know the people around me are going to be loyal at this point, but I think that's important. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, coach, for taking your Sunday and doing this. I'm sure you got grading to do too.
You know it.
All right. Thanks,
coach. I really appreciate it. It was
we'll
a lot
talk
of fun.
Soon. We'll
Thanks
talk to you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, coach. Hope you enjoyed that. If you did, okay, go join teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. You want to become a better basketball coach. Let me help you. You know, where else can you find a mentor for you know, a dinner at McDonald's, basically. Let me help you. Not only resources and communities and handouts and one-on-one calls and office hours. It's got a little bit of everything that will help you become a better basketball coach. Also, go over, subscribe and like, leave a review. And if you're going to do any shopping on Amazon, click down below. We would appreciate it. All right. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.